Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Nedarim Daf Lamed Hey. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara Marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage, and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 9 lines from the top. On the side of the Gemara, you'll notice we have a nosei, a topic heading, which introduces the Gemara's question, she'ela. A question, Haim Yesh Mi'ila Bekoinomos. Konomos is a term that those have been learning Nedarim are quite familiar with it, the word konom in the singular. This is a situation where a person imposes a prohibition on an item. For example, he would say konom kikar ze olai. That would mean that the kikar, the loaf, is unto him like a korban, like a sacrifice. And a sacrifice, obviously, is something that is strictly forbidden to derive personal benefit from it. Now, in the realm of korbanos, of sacrifices, there exists a prohibition of deriving personal benefit, and it's referred to as me'ila. What is the din if a person imposes a personal restriction on an item through the konam method, declaring it like a korban? Does that impose upon it an isur mi'ila as well? And the result of mi'ila is that you would then owe the value of the item. If you do derive personal benefit from it, you would have to pay the value of the item plus a fifth to the Beis Hamikdash. So, how far do we go when we speak about konam as being like a korban? Does that entail the mi'ila violation as well? Bo'amine, the Gemara text now, 9 lines from the top. Bo'amine, Rova Me Rav Nachman, Yesh mi'ila b'kinomos oi loi. Does the mi'ila prohibition apply to a konam isur, a konam prohibition, or not? And we can look in the Ran as well. Across from here, a couple lines down, you see Yesh Me'ila B'Koinomus in the Ran commentary. Ha'oisu Dover Olof B'Koinom, person who imposed a prohibition upon an item using the Konom declaration, V'Nana Mimeno, and then he violates his vow and benefits from it. Mi Mechayev Me'ila Olo. Is he guilty of the Me'ila violation or not? Mi Amrinon de Asoi Kekorbon. Do we say that he made the loaf, for example, or whatever item, like a sacrifice, V'chayev Olof Osho Me'ila, Kinanim and Akochim, and in violation of Me'ila, as would be the case of deriving personal benefit from a sacrifice, you have to bring a special guilt offering called an Oshom Me'ilos. Would he have to do that over here or not? Now, that was the question that Rava raised. Omar Lei, Rav Nachman responds, Tenisuha. You can answer it from our Mishnah. And the Mishnah dealt with a case of Mudar Hana, where someone imposed a prohibition on someone not to benefit from him. And that is, in effect, the same as Konam. And it says in the Mishnah, Mokom Shenoit Lemoleh Aschar, the Mishnah dealt with the issue of returning a lost item, and specifically one party had prohibited deriving benefit from the other party, and the Mishnah said that even though there is this prohibition between them of benefiting one benefit the other, he nevertheless is allowed to return his lost item. However, the Mishnah said that in a place where a fee is paid for the return of a lost article, that fee is to be paid to the Beis Hamikdash. So, in quoting, the Gemara quotes the Mishnah, Mokom Shenot L'Maschar, Tipol Hanol Lehegdish. In a place where a fee is paid for the return of a lost item, that fee cannot be paid to the one returning it, because that would be a violation of the vow, of the koinam. So the money is paid to the Beis HaMikdash. L'Meimra, this shows us, Ki Hegdish, that koinam is like Hegdish, is like sanctification to the Beis HaMikdash. Even though, let me just repeat the main point here, koinam isn't an actual korban. It's a personal prohibition that was imposed. But you see that we treat it as if it were hekdesh. Ma hekdesh yesh bo mi'ilo, just like hekdesh, things that are formally sanctified to the Beis HaMikdash embody within them the mi'ilo prohibition. Af konomos yesh bohen mi'ilo. So to konomos carry with it the mi'ilo prohibition. The Gemara continues and says, Kitanoi, that this issue is in fact a machlokes tanoim. And so you see here a Tanaic source, and within this source you see, you might notice some squiggle underlining, there's Rabbi Meir, and then later the Chachomim, and you'll see this issue is a machlokes. Konam kikar zu hektish v'ochla, a person declared a particular loaf to be konam, to be like a korban, and then he ate it, he violated the vow, bein hu uvein chavero mo'al. This was dashed, underlined, to show that there is mi'ilah b'konamos. And since the konam is treated like hekdish, lefikoch yesh mo'pidyon, therefore just like in the case of hekdish, something can be redeemed, so too, since this item was prohibited on everybody, he mentioned in his vow that this loaf shall be hegdish for everyone. It's prohibited to everyone across the boards, just like something that you sanctify to the Beis HaMikdash proper is prohibited to everyone for personal benefit, and just like something sanctified to the Beis HaMikdash has within it the potential for redemption, whereby you offer money to the Beis HaMikdash in exchange for the item that had been sanctified, thereby releasing it from its status of sanctity. Likewise with something upon which the konam prohibition was imposed. And that's what the Gemara means when it says lefikoch yesh lo pidyon. Now, here's a variation on the theme. Koinam zu olai hegdish. Here, he imposed a konam prohibition on the loaf, but only with regard to himself. We call it a limited prohibition. The ochla, and he then ate it. Hu mo'al, chavero lo mo'al. Once again, there is mi'ilah. He's guilty of the mi'ilah violation. However, his friend, if he eats it, is not mo'al. It wasn't prohibited to him. Lefikach, since the prohibition is limited, it's only on him, it's not a general prohibition, therefore, lefikach ein law pidyon, it doesn't lend itself to redemption. The Ran on this points out, chavero lo mo'al fikach ein law pidyon, the given the chavero lo mo'al, since the friend is not subject to a mi'ilo violation, so the lo olim kehegdish lemitvas pidyon, it doesn't have a high level of sanctity in it. In order for pidyon to be effective, the item would have to have a high level of sanctity. Only then does pidyon appear as an option. But if it doesn't have a high level of sanctity, the expression in the Ran that we just read, lo olim, olim means strong, it's lo olim, it doesn't have the strength of hekdish. Hekdish is something that's what's called a national prohibition. Across the boards, everyone is restricted. Not so in this particular example, where he said, kikar zu olai, he limited it to himself. That is Divrei Rabbi Meir. All of that we've said till now in the source is Rabbi Meir's opinion. V'chachomim omrim. The chachomim, notice, they will disagree. Bein kach u'bein kach lo mo'al. Whether it's a national prohibition, it's a prohibited to everybody, or a personal prohibition, there is lo mo'al. There is no mi'ilah. Lefi she'ein mi'ilah b'konamos. And notice, of course, the dashed underlining. there is no mi'ilah when it comes to something that's prohibited through konam. So as the Gemara said, the issue that was raised by Rava turns out to be a machlokes tanoim between Rabbi Meir and the Chachomim. Now we have a question, and on the side we introduce this with a nosei, the sheila kikri olecha. Person declared the a loaf to be prohibited upon his friend. It's asur to you. V'nosalo b'matona, and then he gives it to him as a gift. Mimoal, is there mi'ila in doing so? And this question is raised. Aliba the mandamar yesh mi'ila b'konamas. In light of what we just got finished discussing, this question of mi'ila will be relevant only if you hold that the concept of mi'ila or the mi'ila prohibition exists within the realm of konamos. So making that assumption that there is mi'ila b'konamos, we now ask the following. We can turn to the Gemara text, and you'll notice we have a question that's illustrated as a five-line question. Omar le Rav Acha bre de Rav Avi le Rav Ashi. Kikari olecha, my loaf upon you, means I'm asering, I'm prohibiting my loaf to you. V'nosna loy b'matona. And then he gives it to him as a gift. Mimoal, is there mi'ila? So we now analyze who would be guilty of the mi'ila here. Lim oil noisein. Should we say that the noisein, the giver of the gift, the original owner, is guilty of mi'ila? But holo asira ale, it wasn't prohibited upon him. So why should he be guilty of a mi'ila offense if he's simply transferring something that it was not usur, wasn't prohibited to him in the first place? Lim oil mekabel, should we say that the receiver of the gift is guilty of mi'ila? Yochol da'omar, well, he can respond. Hetero bo'isi, sura lo bo'isi. I was willing to receive something that is mutter. I'm not willing to receive something that is prohibited, so that the my receipt isn't a receipt. I'm not receiving something that I don't want to receive. Omar le. So Rav Ashi answers, Mekabel mo'al l'cheshiyotzi. The receiver of the gift, of the item, will be guilty of mi'ila when he transfers it away, when he uses it, when he sells it. Shekol ha'moitzi mois hegdish l'chulin, kosover shel chulin hu mo'al. There is a well-known principle with regard to this expenditure of items that were sanctified. Anyone who spends sanctified monies for mundane purposes, thinking that the money was in fact mundane. In other words, we're not dealing with a malicious individual. We're dealing with someone that genuinely thought, or we could say mistakenly thought, that the money that he was using to buy a shirt, to buy a lawnmower, was mundane, chulin, common funds. And it turned out to be hegdish. We say he is guilty of mi'ilah. So, afzeh mo'el, so to the one who receives the prohibited item, when he takes that prohibited item, and let's say he exchanges it for some other item. He takes the prohibited loaf and exchanges it for a spoon. At that point, he will be guilty of mi'ila, even though he thought that the item was allowed. The Rashi points out, the example here is that the receiver of the loaf will be guilty of mi'ila if he eats it. We continue with the Mishnah at the top of Omid Beis. By the way, we just want to remind you that if you're interested in accessing marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. The Mishnah. Now, the Mishnah continues with the general theme of Mudur Hanoa Mechavero, where one prohibited someone else from deriving benefit. The Mishnah says, even though the one had imposed a prohibition on the other from deriving benefit from him. Vitorim es trumaso maestrosov ledaito. He is allowed to tithe his produce, the truma tithe and the meiser tithe. The details of this will be dealt with in the Gemara, so we're not going to dwell on it right now. You can see the Rashi immediately says, Rashi and the Ran say Meforish b'Gemara. The details will be explained in the Gemara. And if the Madir was a Kohen, if the one who imposed the vow, the prohibition on the other fellow, is a Kohen who is able to serve in the Beis HaMikdash, the Mishnah says, Umakriv olav, kinei zovim, kinei zovos, kinei yoldos, chatois vashamos. He, as a Kohen, can offer the other party, the prohibited parties, various sacrifices. The kini are bird offerings. A cane is a bird offering. Generally speaking, two birds are contained within a bird offering. And a zav and zavos, these are different types of people that experience defilement. And after their requisite purification period, there is an obligation on their part to bring these sacrifices. And kine yoldos, these are women that bore children. Chatos and Hashemos, sin offerings and guilt offerings. Tomorrow we'll delve into this in greater detail as well. What else? Even though one has prohibited his friend from benefiting, umalamdo, medrash, halachas vagodos, he is allowed to teach him different areas of Torah. Medrash is the, we'll say, the oral tradition and understanding verses of the Torah. Halachas and agodos, and avolo yilamdenu mikra. But actual scripture, mikra, verses, he cannot teach him. Avo malamid hu es bonov ves benoisov mikra. But he can teach the prohibited parties, sons and daughters, mikra. The topic heading that we have for this piece of Gemara, you can see on the side, the nosei, and we also indicate that it's a long topic. It goes to daf lamid vov amud aleph. Hani kehanim. We're going to be analyzing the role of kohanim as, we'll say, agents for the offering of sacrifices. Shluchei shmayahem o shluchei didon. Are they considered agents of heaven, carrying out the will of heaven, or are they considered our agents? A non-Kohen, obviously, cannot physically offer sacrifices, do the temple ritual, the Avodas HaKorbanos. That's something that only the Kohanim have a right to do. Are the Kohanim possibly then our agents for the offering of sacrifices? And you'll ask, what difference does it make how you categorize them, either heaven's agents or our agents? Nafgamina l'kohen shehidir ano. The practical nafgamina is a Kohen who declared that he does not allow his friend to benefit from him, from the Kohen. Can the Kohen offer this fellow's sacrifices? Is that considered a violation of the vow? If you say that the Kohen is an agent of heaven, so he's not acting as an emissary, as an agent of the prohibited party, so that would be okay. However, if you say that a Kohen in offering sacrifices is the agent of the owner of the sacrifice, then the Kohen who said to this particular party, I don't want you to benefit from me, if the Kohen acts as his agent, he is then conveying benefit by acting out or carrying out the orders and the desires of the person that he had said he will not allow to benefit. The Gemara, Ibayalaho, and we now raise the question that we introduced, Hani Kaihani, Kohanim that are offering sacrifices, Shluchei Didon Havu, are they the agents of the owner of the sacrifice, or Shluchei Dishmaya, or are they agents of heaven. L'may nafka mina, what practical difference is there? The answer to that is l'mudar hana. The practical difference comes in the case where that one had restricted the other from deriving benefit. And specifically in this case, in a case that the Kohen had said to a specific person, I don't want you to derive benefit from me. If you say that the Kohen is an agent of the owner of the sacrifice, well, homahani levi osir, by carrying out the owner's will and acting as his agent, well, then the Kohen is giving benefit to someone that the vow had indicated otherwise, that the Kohen is not to give benefit to him. The Kohen said, I don't want you to benefit from me. And if he's going to act as his agent, the Kohen is going to act as his agent, then the fellow is benefiting from the Kohen. The Amrish Shluchei Dishmaya, sorry, if you say that the Kohen isn't acting as his agent, he's acting as the agent of heaven. So then it would be okay for this Kohen who had imposed a konam, or imposed a madir hanoah from the other fellow, to offer his sacrifices. My. So we want to know how to evaluate, how to categorize kohanim. Are they shluchei didon or shluchei deshmaya? And now we have a marking scheme. Take note of the fact that this marking scheme continues to lamed vav amud aleph, alternating direction triangles. On the side of the Gemara, the Mivneh heading, you can see there is a ma'akav, an attempt to keep track. The triangle point facing upwards, hichachost sheshluchei d'shmaya, these will be attempts to, let's say, prove, to show that they are agents of heaven. The inverted triangle, d'chios, there will be rejections of what was said till that point. Ulioilam shluchei didon, and will be maintaining at that point that the Kohen is really our agent. Toshma Disnan. We quote from our Mishnah, which featured someone who was we had Mudur Hano Mechavero, he had restricted his friend from deriving benefit, and yet it says Umakriv Olav Kine Zoven V'chule, the Kohen is able to offer his sacrifices, the friend's sacrifices. If you were to say that the Kohen is the owner's agent, how in the world can he offer his sacrifices? He would be bestowing benefit upon the friend contrary to the vow. And that benefit is by simply doing his agency. The Gemara rejects this. Ulita'amech. According to you, that you want to say that the Kohen is shluchei d'shmaya, why did the Mishnah choose, we'll say, these peculiar or specific examples in referring to the sacrifices? Listening, let the Mishnah simply have said, makriv olav korbonos. The Kohen offers all sacrifices. Why did the Mishnah specify these sacrifices? Elo, rather, mechusrei kapora shiny. The sacrifices in the Mishnah were actually very deliberate examples. They are examples of mechusrei kapora. Now, let's define mechusrei kapora and we'll understand things a little better. People bring sacrifices for any number of reasons. In some cases, the lack of bringing of the sacrificial offering results in the individual not being able to, let's say, achieve total purification from a state of defilement. And as a result, he or she won't be able to eat sacrificial meat. What we just described is a specific realm called mechusrei kapora. The words mean literally, they are missing kapora. Kapora is a word often interchangeable with sacrifices. Literally, they are missing atonement, but we're not dealing with the realm of sin. And that's an important point here. We're dealing with people that until they bring their sacrifice, they do not achieve full purification. This is, by the way, in contrast with someone, let us say, that had eaten blood, or eaten chelev, or violated Shabbos, all b'shogeg, unwittingly. Those people have committed a sin, and they have to bring sacrifices as well. However, they are not called mechusrei kapara. A person, let us say, who violated Shabbos unwittingly, b'shogeg, true, he's committed a sin, but that doesn't affect his status of purity. He's able to eat sacrificial meat, even if he didn't bring the sacrifice. So our Mishnah is dealing with a very specific type of korban that the, when we speak about the Mudar Hanome Chavero, that Kohen nevertheless can offer them. These are korbanos of Mechusrei Kaporah. In the examples of the Mishnah, the Zovin, the Zavos, the Yoldos, these are all people that had experienced defilement, not sins, defilement, necessitating them after a purification period to bring specific sacrifices. And those enable us to say, as the Gemara says, Mechusrei Kaporah Shaini. I will tell you that in general, as we wrote in between the lines, as we took from the commentaries, that Kohanim are essentially Shluchei Didon. But when you're dealing with this kind of sacrifice, Mechusrei Kaporah, it's different. Yom Rabbi Yochanan, Hakol Tzrichim Das Chutzmi Mechusrei Kaporah. In all other cases of sacrificial offering, you have to have the approval of the owner of the sacrifice, the exception being Mechusrei Kaporah, Sheri Odo Mevi Korban Al Bonov the Al Benoisov Haktanim. A person can bring sacrifices for his children that are minors. Shenemar Zois Teiras Hazav, that's what the Pasuk says, Bein Godol Bein Koton. If you have a person's children that became defiled, the father will bring the necessary sacrifices for their final purification. And you're talking about for them, for the minors. They don't have das, they don't have a mindset about them. And just like the sacrifice is effective for them, likewise you can bring it for someone even if he is unaware of your bringing it. They don't have to have awareness of your bringing the sacrifice for their purification. And since you can offer it without their knowledge, we say that your offering of it is not a case of your bestowing benefit or hanoah to them. He's not even aware that you're doing it. And this, you can see we emphasize in the Rashi, across from here, I'm reading in the middle of the Rashi, where Rashi says at the first word of the line, Hilkoch Hil Makriv Alof Shelo Ladaito, since you're offering it without his knowledge, Lo Mahani Le, you're not considered bestowing benefit or pleasure to him. Toho Lo Yoda Hamudar, the subject of the vow isn't even aware of what you're doing. So, from our Mishnah, you cannot conclude that the Kohanim are Shluchei Dishmaya. In fact, Kohanim are Shluchei Didon, and the reason that the Kohen who was Madir Hanomei Chayav can offer the sacrifices is because you're dealing with specific sacrifices, sacrifices of Mechusrei Kapora. The Gemara continues, Elo Me'ata, L'Rabbi Yochanan, Zois Teiras Hayoledes V'chule, Bein Ktano U'Bein Gedola. The Pasuk uses, in the case of a woman bearing a child, the same expression as we saw with the Zav, Zos Toras. And here it says Zos Toras Hayoledes. So according to let's say Rabbi Yochanan's way of learning the Psukim, you're going to then say, well, you have to bring sacrifices for the Yoledes, for the woman bearing a child, Bein Tano, Bein Gedola, whether she's a minor bearing a child or an adult. Well, Ketana Bas Leidahi, is a minor capable of bearing a child. Vahotoni Rav Bevai Kamei de Rav Nachman. Rav Bevai teaches the following source: Shalosh Noshim Misham Shois B'Moich. The three categories of women that are entitled to conduct intimacy with their husbands using a contraceptive. The moch is a piece of fabric inserted into that area of the woman that would absorb the male seed, preventing her from becoming pregnant. And we'll call these three categories whereby we allow for this special dispensation. Katana, umuberes, umenika. And there's a great amount of discussion of this in other Gemaras. We want to focus only on one point. Amongst the ladies allowed to use this contraceptive is a katana, a minor. She's married. Her father married her off to a man. And in their intimacy, she can use the moch. Shemotis aber v'tomus. We're fearful that she might become pregnant, and if she becomes pregnant, she's going to die as a result of that. So minors don't give birth. Now, if that's the case, then how was Rabbi Yochanan able to darshan the posik before, whereby we derive, in the case of Zois Teras Hazav, we derived the cotton as well, which was the basis of our answer before? The Gemara says there is no problem here. The drosha that Rabbi Yochanan mentioned, it stands, namely that Zois Teras Hazav comes to include minors. And as far as the Yoledes Pasuk is darshan, Hahi Zois Teras Yoledes, this Zois Teras expression is used for something else. Bein Pikris, Bein Shoita. Whether the wife is a sane individual, or if she's a Shoita, she's imbecile or insane, nevertheless, the husband will bring a korban for her on the occasion that she bore a child. Shekein Oda Mevi Korban Al Ishto Shoita. Kedivrei Rabbi Yehuda. And based on Rabbi Yehuda's teaching, a man will bring a sacrifice for his woman, even if she is a Shoita. And I think that we see here as well the concept of no knowledge, just like we mentioned before with regard to the cotton. Desanya Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Odo Mevi Korban Oshir Al Ishto. A woman who marries a man, she might be a woman with limited means, but she married a man of wealth. In certain areas of korban, bringing of sacrifices, the sacrifice, the type of sacrifice is dependent on income or dependent on wealth of individual. That's called a korban oile v'yoreid. And we don't have to get into the details of that right now. We're looking primarily to see Rabbi Yehuda's teaching that a man is obligated to bring his wife's sacrifices. The chol korbanos shechayeves. A man brings a sacrifice, the expensive type sacrifice, if he's a man of means, for his wife, and all sacrifices that she is obligated in bringing. Shekach koisev law. Thusly, he writes in their marriage, in the ksuba, he guarantees the following. Vachrayas disle cholai min kadmis dinah. And whatever sacrificial obligations you have are now upon me. The Rashi, three lines from the bottom, mentions the point that we alluded to before. Shikach kosav lo v'achrayas v'chulei dochi mashma achriyusa olai v'chihechi d'hai mei v'korban al ishto yoledes afilu shoyta kach kol mechusre kapor ein tzrichen das. Just like a man will bring a sacrifice for his wife, that she lost her marbles, she's an imbecile, but she gave birth, and that generates the need for a sacrifice. As we mentioned before, that sacrifice is associated with purification. It's not associated with sin. If we're associated with sin, so then a shoita is not someone who is considered in violation of sins. They don't have their minds about them. But we're not dealing with that. We're dealing with purification. And as such, we see that when you're dealing with the realm of mechusrei kapara, which, again, we mentioned before, that's an expression that's associated with korbanos that are brought for purification purposes, You don't need das. Here the wife is a shoita. She's not aware of what's going on. She's an imbecile. And yet the korban is brought on her behalf. And as such, we can still maintain the position that kohanim are shluchei didon. We continue at the top of Daf Lamed Vav in this discussion. Mosiv Rav Simi Bar Abba. Rav Simi quotes now a source that will show us to the contrary that they're shluchei dishmaya. It says im hoya kohen, if the madir, if the person who imposed the vow on his friend is a, if he's a kohen, Yizrok olov dam chatos v'dam ashamoy, he can sprinkle the chatos and osham bloods of chatos and osham, which are sin and guilt offerings respectively. Now it's mashma, that would imply even in non-mechusar kapora situations. Now, if it's non-mechusar kapor, it's like general sacrificial offering, and the Kohen is going to be processing the korban for someone that is not allowed to benefit from him, it must be that the Kohen is shluchei dishmaya. He's the heaven's agent. Otherwise, he would be in violation of the neder. The Gemara rejects that question or rejects that point and says, "Dam chatosoi shel mitzora v'dam ashamo shel mitzora." The Tanaic source that made reference to chatos and osham are not general sin offerings, but rather back to the realm of mechusrei kapora. And I will maintain that in general, kohanim are shulchei didon, and from here you don't see any violation of the vow because you're dealing with mechusrei kapora. The chatos of a mitzvah, person who was a mitzorah, they, at the conclusion of their tzoras period, the tzoras is that phenomenon that's associated with negoim, with skin discoloration that the Torah details in Parshas Tazria and Sefer Vayikra. At the conclusion of that defilement period, they bring sacrifices. And again, you're dealing with Chusrei Kapora. Dichtiv and the Pasuk indicates thusly, Zos Tiaturas Hamitzora, and you see that expression again, Zos Tiaturas, Bein Godol, Bein Koton. We include even the Koton, who is not someone that has any awareness. And yet I bring on his behalf the requisite Karbonus. Rashi again just reminds us that when it says Bein Koton Bein Godol, we're showing you don't need das, and that lack of das requirement, the ability to bring without das applies even if the client is an adult. Tanan, ha kohenim shepiglu b'mikdash mezidin chayovin. The term piglu has to do with sacrifices that are offered with an incorrect mindset, specifically regarding, time and place. For example, a person slaughters a korban and then sprinkles the blood with the intention of eating the meat of the korban 3 days from now. That's an incorrect thing to do. That ruins the korban. If a kohen offered the korban with that incorrect mindset, knowingly, mazed, chayoven means he has to compensate the owner in the purchase of a new sacrifice. Now, if the kohen was mefagel ha-shoigigin, if he did so unwittingly, not knowing that there's any problem in incorrect thoughts, p'turin, they will be exempt from the compensation, ela shepigulon pigul. But as far as the effectiveness of the korban, no, it's a ruined korban. If that kohanim are categorized as the agents of heaven, hainu, shepigulon pigol. And I understand that the I understand the ruination of the korban. Eloi amris shluchei didon. But if you say that they are our emissaries, that the kohen is acting on behalf of the owner of the animal of the sacrifice, amai pigulon pigul. How can the agent's incorrect thought result in the ruination of the korban? Lay mole, let the owner say, shlicha shavisich liskuni velo lavisi. I appointed you as an agent in order to operate on for my benefit, not for my ruination, not to mess me up. And therefore, if the kohen would have a machsheves pigol, which is something that is to the detriment of the owner, the agency doesn't exist. There is no agency for that. So we are demonstrating from this that it must be that kohanim are shluchei d'shmaya. And if you're following our marking scheme, you can see the triangle. The last triangle's point was facing upwards, and now it's inverted. The Gemara rejects that objection or that point and says, Amri, I will tell you in general, the Kehanim are Shluchei Didon. And if you'll ask if it's Shluchei Didon, so then how can his wrongful mindset take effect? Shiny Gabi Pigol, the Omar Kral, the realm of Pigol is different. There's a scriptural dictate. Lo Yehoshev, Lo Pigol Yihyeh. That's the pasuk, and that means mikol makom. Under all circumstances, it will be pigul. If the kohen has a wrongful mindset, even though according to the standard laws of shlichus, his shlichus would have been, let's say, canceled. Nevertheless, since you're dealing with the realm of pigul, his wrongful mindset will take hold anyway. So as you can see, following this back and forth scheme, we are left with the distinct possibility that the Kehanim are not necessarily Shluchei D'Shmaya. They may very well be Shluchei D'Don. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access Marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.